event with us. Shnat HaSheva, for those who do not know, is an Otzer Beit Din project being developed by Rabbi Dr. Ari Bergman and a dozen YU Talmidim. Shnat HaSheva has been endorsed by the Gedolei Hador from across the spectrum, including Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichrono Livracha, Rav Asher Weiss, and Rav Rimon, as well as Rav Sheth, Rav Willig, and many of our Rabbanim. Shnat HaSheva has been transforming the Israeli Shemitah environment, enabling produce and Kedusha of Shemitah to be properly distributed around Israel. And additionally, Shnat HaSheva will be providing Perot Shviya to over 75,000 yeshiva and seminary students this year. I invite you to come and learn more about the tremendous program, both at Rabbi Bergman's Sunday Shira at Rinat, as well as on their website, which is easy to remember. You ready for this? Year 7, that's YEARSEVEN.org. And I want to personally thank Rabbi Bergman, as well as Rabbi Yaakov, and all those who have helped coordinate this incredible opportunity for our shul, to welcome back once again Rabbi Ari Leibowitz, who's no stranger here. He has spoken here on numerous occasions at this point, although not necessarily always to the same people. I just want to say very briefly, you know, Rabbi Leibowitz does not want me to introduce him. I'll keep it very, very brief. I'll just say that we're going to hear tonight about the power of Shemitah, and I'm sure that you're going to hear a lot more in terms of substance and content that I'll say in 1 minute. But my understanding is, at least on one level, a Shemitah is about allowing each and every Jew the opportunity to disengage, to disconnect, to pull back from some of our regular worldly endeavors, responsibilities, and to a certain extent distractions, and focus to a large extent on our own personal spiritual development, our study of Torah, our relationship to Rabbono Shel Olam, with ourselves, with our families, with our communities, and so much more. Some among the Jewish people are zocha to do that in a most extraordinary way, not just once every 7 years, but really, you know, every single day. Rabbi Leibowitz is someone who, over the course of his career, which is ever evolving, has really distinguished himself in this regard. I know that he has the same 24 hours in a day that I do. I'm still trying to figure out how it is possible. It seems to be mathematically impossible to accomplish all that he does, to be Marbitz Torah on the level that he does, qualitatively and quantitatively, always with a smile and with a tremendous sense of purpose, a tremendous sense of devotion and dedication, the likes of which, you know, we aspire to achieve on a certain level once every 7 years. And here, Rabbi Leibowitz, Klein Ahari, is able to do so in such an extraordinary manner each and every day. So it really is a great personal honor and privilege, privileged on behalf of the entire community to welcome Rabbi Leibowitz and to talk about the power of Shemitah.
Sure. Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Rabbi Rothwax, for your show, the Marad Asra. One thing I forgot to ask is how long I'm supposed to speak for, which is something I always try to remember to ask. Anyone know?
No more than 6 years, I guess.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. Okay.
Can I request that everybody mute yourselves? I've been asked to mute everybody. I'm trying to figure out how to do that very quickly. But meanwhile, if you can just mute yourself, I feel like it's been 2 years since I've asked people to mute themselves. But please do if you're listening. And I've made it so it's impossible for people to unmute themselves at this point. So please, please, if you're listening, mute yourself. Thank you so much.
Okay, I feel like I just went back to 2020. Okay, so so first of all, I also want to thank the Shnat HaSheva organization for arranging for this evening and really this whole weekend in Tinek Bezer Hashem. I don't know how much you picked up from Rabbi Rothwax's read of their mission, but look into it. It's an amazing, amazing program that they have that's really bringing Klal Yisrael together from really all segments of Klal Yisrael. And rallying around this beautiful mitzvah of Shemitah, and this mitzvah, this rare mitzvah that comes up once every 7 years. It is particularly a pleasure to speak about a mitzvah like Shemitah, mitzvah Tulia Ba'aretz, on Yom HaTzmaut, where it has extra meaning. I don't know if today is act, I mean, now it's like around Seiza Ben HaShemashos now, so we're like between Yom HaTzmaut observed and actual Yom HaTzmaut, whatever you observe. We're somewhere around the area of Yom HaTzmaut right now, so it is particular pleasure to speak about Mitzvah Tliya Ba'aretz around this time. And I would encourage you, if you've never met Rabbi Dr. Ari Bergman before, and you have an opportunity over the weekend to do so, it's something special. He is something special, and someone very much worth meeting and worth hearing from, and what he's doing, the kochos that he has to galvanize people and to bring Klal Yisrael together in this way, and is just really just incredible. He's a big Talmud Chacham too. So what I want to talk about is to talk about Shemitah from three different perspectives. You know, whenever you talk about Shemitah, the first place you open up a Chumash. You open up to Parshas Bahar, and at the beginning of Parshas Bahar, we learn about Shemitah and Yovel, and most notably, people like to talk about the first Rashi in Parshas Bahar. I think I have a streak of like 15 years running. Every Shabbos Parshas Bahar, I speak about the same Rashi. I speak about the first Rashi in Parshas Bahar, and one of my Baal Batim even pointed out that I start with the same joke for like 10 years running. So, it's not even a good joke. It's not even a funny one. So I'm not even going to repeat it, I don't think. Maybe. But what I want to talk about is Shemitah from three different perspectives. One, I want to talk about how Shemitah affects the other 6 years. Two, I want to talk about how the other 6 years affect Shemitah. And then third, to talk about the totality of it, how Shemitah and Yovel work together and impact our lives. Now, our lives meaning not only the lives of those who live in Eretz Yisrael and observe Shemitah in a very active and very often with a tremendous amount of Mesiris Nefesh kind of way, and I don't mean the kind of Mesiris Nefesh that when you go to Israel for a week that you're going to be machmir not to buy Heter Mechira stuff or whatever chumrah you want to take. I mean like being an actual farmer who has to give up on your livelihood for an entire year, and to talk about not only that, but what it means to us and what the messages of Shemitah are from a hashkafic level. Again, from these three perspectives. How Shemitah affects the other 6 years, that it's not only a once every 7 years kind of mitzvah, it's a mitzvah that impacts the entire cycle. How the other 6 years affect Shemitah and the impact of the totality of the system. So let's start with how Shemitah affects the other 6 years. I heard a shiur a while back, and the title of the shiur was Seven Lessons to Learn from Shemitah. So I told a friend of mine, Rabbi Yehuda Balzum, that I heard this year, Seven Lessons to Learn from Shemitah. He said, oh, interesting. How many of the lessons were bitachon? And I thought about it, and I said, oh, all seven. Yeah, I guess it's one lesson to learn from Shemitah. They were all about bitachon. It's fairly uncomplicated, meaning the idea that a farmer is going to give up working his land for a year and trust that the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to provide, that is an unbelievable amount of bitachon. It's all about bitachon. It expresses a fundamental trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the message of Shemitah in that sense is uncomplicated. But if you look around in the Chumash itself, around that area in the Chumash, in Parshas Bahar itself, the Torah also emphasizes another mitzvah in the context of Shemitah, and it's surprising. You wouldn't expect it to be brought up around that context. And that is the prohibition to charge interest, the prohibition to take ribbis when you lend somebody money, which on its surface has absolutely nothing to do with Shemitah. Chazal, in fact, seem to go overboard with their descriptions of how bad ribbis is, of what a terrible avera it is to charge a few percentage points of interest when you lend somebody money, which in society at large, as long as you're not a loan shark, as long as you're not someone who's going after people with exorbitant interest rates, is generally considered a chesed. If the interest, the going rate that they can get from a bank is 5%, and you're willing to lend at 3%, you're a tzaddik. They'll be koreo mishtachavet to you, and thank you for your kindness. And the Torah says that that's a terrible thing, that that's a terrible avera. So I want to try to understand why that is. But it's even more than that. The Gemara Minsachs B'Metzia Daf Ayin Hey says that somebody who charges interest is mashmia Moshe Rabbeinu Chacham v'toroso emes. He is declaring that Moshe Rabbeinu is a Chacham and Moshe's Torah is truth. And that is what we call a Lashon Sagi Nahar. The Gemara sometimes doesn't want to say the words that it means to say because they're so crude, they're so difficult to say, that the Gemara will say it in the opposite of what it wants to say. And what the Gemara is trying to say for real is that if a person charges interest, it's as if they are declaring Moshe Rabbeinu to be a fool and the Torah to be false. Now, why on earth is charging interest something that would rise to that level, that it's a denial of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu? Furthermore, The mitzvah of Shemitah, as we know, is to observe a sabbatical for the land during the seventh year. Now, the tricky thing about a seventh anything is that in order to get to the seventh, you need to have the first six. So you would imagine that when the Torah would describe Shemitah, the Torah would say that first, Sheshanim Tizra Sadech, Sheshanim Tizmar Kramecha, that you should plant your field and your vineyard for 6 years. Oh, and by the way, in the seventh year, Vishav Saharit Shabbos Lashem. The strange thing is, the Torah doesn't do that. It actually reverses the order. It starts with the seventh and then goes back to describe the sixth. First we have, it tells us first about Vishav Saharet Shabbos Hashem, and only then talks about how to work the other 6 years. If we're working up toward a goal, why flip it? Why go in the wrong direction? And a final question to get us started. On the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, Rav Shechter always likes to tell us about, he grew up in Philadelphia, and on the Liberty Bell, if you ever go see it, it's not much to see, but it's like you see it for a minute, then you're done. But on the Liberty Bell, there's a pasuk. There's a pasuk that's written on the Liberty Bell. It's not written in Hebrew, if I recall correctly. It's written in English, and it's the reason that it's called the Liberty Bell. It's the pasuk that says that that you shall declare liberty to all its inhabitants, right? That crossing drar ba'aretz, l'chol yashveha, that we declare liberty to all its inhabitants. So it's always cool when you see a pasuk from Chumash in some secular setting. But it's an interesting thing that we have that idea that when the Yovel comes, when the Yovel year comes, we declare liberty to all of the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael. Now, what actually happens in the Yovel year? Does everyone experience a sense of liberty? Not really. The liberty was for slaves who now went free, and for people who had run into such hardship that they were forced to sell their family real estate. And they now got back their family real estate that when business went south, they were forced to sell. So, it wouldn't have the same ring to it if it said, and thou shalt declare liberty to a small percentage of its inhabitants, right? It just wouldn't ring the same way. But that would be more accurate. In what way is the liberty l'kol yoshveha? So I saw a beautiful idea from Rabbi Bitzal Rudinsky a number of years ago, where he suggests, Bitzal Rudinsky is Rosh Shiva in Muncie, New York, and a big Talmud Chacham, and he speaks in our yeshiva, I think, still once a year. He comes to our yeshiva to speak. He said that when he comes to the yeshiva, to YU, he feels energized. He was shocked the first time. He didn't know what YU was. And then he came and he saw a Beis Medrash that's excited and that's energized, and he can't get enough of it, so he said he keeps coming back. So Rabbi Rudinsky suggested that we can answer all these questions based on a fascinating Kli Yakar, and it's one of those game-changing Kli Yakars. Like, it turns our entire understanding of something that we thought we understood and just turns it on its head. The Kli Yakar wonders why the Torah has such a problem with charging interest, going back to our first question, right? What's so bad about ribbis? And the Kli Yakar has a collection of Ma'amari Chazal that talk about just how terrible ribbis is. Yerushalmi in the fifth parak of Bamitzia, kol hamalva beribbis, kofer be'ikr. It's as if he's denying God's existence when you lend money with interest. Medrash Tanchuman, Mishpatim, hamalva beribbis, eina krush baruchu nosei v'nosein bedino, eloposek es dino miyad. If you lend money with interest, Hashem's not interested in going back and forth and thinking about whether you deserve punishment. Right away, you're sent straight to Gehenna. There's no discussion. Throws the book at you. Shmos Rabba, Misha notal ribis, mala lavakasov kilu asa, es kol haraos va'averos shaba olam. You lend money with ribis, it's as if you did all of the averos in the world. Shmos Rabba, lamed alif, amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mi shechai beribis ba'olam hazeh, lo yichya lo olam haba. Meaning this would go on the list of people who don't have a chelek in olam haba, according to the Medrash. Someone who charges, these are very, very strong statements. Now, Chazal do have a tendency sometimes to speak in very strong statements. We have an expression that dibru chachamim b'loshon guzma, that chachamim speak in exaggerated terms sometimes, because sometimes we like the rabbi likes to make a point, so he tries to exaggerate just how important something is, right? I remember Rabbi Moshe Benovitz once spoke in NCSY, to NCSY Kolol Madrichim, and it was, I think it was a program Hashem on Hoshana Rabba night in Eretz Yisrael. And he was saying that, you know, you can hear tonight how Hoshana Rabba is like Yom HaKippurim, it's the Chasimas Hadin, and he said, you know when I never heard anyone talking about how Hoshana Rabba is more important than Yom Kippur? At Ne'ilah. No one ever says that at Ne'ilah. You know, they only say that on Hoshana Rabba. I mean, we have a tendency that when it comes time to speak, you know, to speak about what's going on, that it's the most important thing in the world, that we always speak B'Loshon Guzma. But even by the standards of Chazal, who speak B'Loshon Guzma, Chacham speak B'Loshon Guzma. I once heard of Dr. Schneur Lyman was introduced to speak, and the introduction was, Dr. Lyman is amazing, but the introduction was like so over the top, similar to what your rabbi just did before. It was so over the top that Dr. Lyman got up and he said, Dibru Chachamim B'Loshon Guzma, and your rabbi has just proven that he is a Chacham indeed, that he has spoken B'Loshon Guzma. But still, even understanding that the Chacham speak B'Loshon Guzma, this is a bit much. So Kli Yaakov offers an insight again that turns our understanding of the Yisaribis and in turn Shemitah 180 degrees. It's not so bad to charge interest because of what we are doing to the borrower, says the Kli Yaakov. Rather, it is so terrible because of what the lender is doing to himself. You see, in every business, there's always a certain amount of uncertainty in the business. You know, I develop a new product and I make a pitch to investors, and I don't know if that product will be irrelevant in a year or two from now. Things move so quickly. I don't know if I'll have enough time to get into the green before the product becomes irrelevant. I don't know what the demand is going to be exactly. I'm a doctor. I open up a new practice. I'm not actually a doctor, but I'm saying if someone is a doctor and they open up a new practice, they hope that others will refer patients to them, so they try to network as much as they can, and then they hope and they daven that will happen. An entrepreneur starts a business, no idea if it will be successful. The traditionally, the safest and most guaranteed way to make a living has always been money lending, not selling things on Amazon, money lending. That's always been traditionally the safest way to make a living. As long as you lend your money to trustworthy and honest people, you have a schedule of payments where you know exactly how much money is coming in and when. And therefore, there's no sense of desperation, and there's no perception that you need the Ribono Shel Olam. And that movement away from reliance on the Ribono Shel Olam, says the Kli Yaakov, is what's so terrible about the Isser of Ribbis. Because a person will feel that he's in control, that he doesn't need to reach out to the Ribono Shel Olam. In fact, says the Kli Yaakov, you know why it's permissible to charge interest to a Nachri, to someone who is not Jewish? It's not because we have lighter standards of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro with a Nachri than we do with a Jew, which may be true, but that's not the reason, he says. It's because historically, the Nachri couldn't be trusted to repay the loans that were made by Jews, because very often the government would give them the upper hand and they wouldn't have to. If a Jew would try to sue a Nachri in a secular court throughout the generations where anti-Semitism has been very prevalent, you weren't going to get paid back. So you're allowed to charge ribbis to a Nachri because you still had that risk factor and you still weren't sure what tomorrow was going to bring. So you still had to turn to the Ribono Shel Olam. So Rudinsky explains that this can answer all of the questions that we had before. Ribbis is so terrible because the foundation of our religion, and really any religion, is a relationship with God. Ribbis puts us on a road away from that relationship. You know, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tefillah that there are three basic components to Tefillah. There's praise of Hashem, there's Bakashas Tzrachim, we ask for our needs, that's the major middle part of Shemon Esrei, and there's Hoda'ah, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of Shemon Esrei. Now the first and last parts make a lot of sense as part of the basic definition of Tefillah, to praise Hashem and to thank Hashem. Why is it so critical to be Mevakesh Tzrachav? What if I don't feel like I'm missing anything? You know, sometimes, what if I'm not really so interested in returning the judges to the way they were in previous year? I don't even know what that means exactly, right? What if I don't got a problem with the Malshim? Shinim, you know, they're not causing me trouble. I have someone in mind sometimes, but the let's say I don't have something like that to think about. It's not something that really speaks to me. Why is it so important to ask? The essence of tefillah is to draw close to Hashem, and that comes with a sense of reliance and dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we don't have that feeling that we're missing something, it's a fundamental lack in our bitachon, because we have to realize that everything that's going well and everything that's not going well is completely dependent on the Ribono Shel Olam. So the Torah tells us about Shemitah year before it tells us about the 6 years, because the 6 years don't lead into the Shemitah. the Shemitah leads into the 6 years. See, it's easy to experience bitachon during Shemitah because you have no choice but to experience bitachon. You have no other way to make it. You're running on the fuel of bitachon. You know, I mentioned today, I spoke in yeshiva today about Yom HaTzmut, that I asked my uncle once, my aunt already passed away, but my aunt and uncle made Aliyah in the 1970s, in the early 70s, and they moved to Rehovot. And I asked my uncle, like, how do you make it? How do you make a living? How did you do it? It was much harder then than it is now. And he said, well, it's simple. You know, if I make $100, I'll spend $150, and then I'll save the rest. It's like when you're fueled by bitachon, of course there's no choice but to have bitachon. The challenge is to recognize when we are working the field, when we're working for a living, the other 6 years, that parnasa still comes from Hashem, and we need to rely on Him for everything. And yes, indeed, ukrasim dror l'chol yoshveha. It's not simply a statement of physical bondage or financial pressure. It's a statement about bitachon. When people internalize the message of Shemitah and Yovel, they're liberated psychologically. The Chavos Halvavos writes that a person who's always nervous lacks bitachon, that very often it's a symbol of a lack of bitachon. I was talking to a Talmud who was thinking about going into chinuch. We've been making a big push. The world needs more rabbis. I know it's hard to believe. It seems that there are so many rabbis. The world needs more. We need more mechanchim. I have schools calling me every day, and I'm not even in the placement office. I have schools calling me every day that they're looking for good rabbeim, for good mechanchim. So the world needs it. And I was talking to a Talmud, and he said, can you just tell me, like, how much does a pulpit rabbi make? And like, how do you, I'm like, maybe this isn't for you. Like, if you're going to have to cheshbon all of this out in advance, you know, you have to, there is a certain amount of bitachon that you're going to need going into the business. And that's, that if a person truly trusts HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take care of everything, he wouldn't be so nervous all the time. A life of bitachon is a more peaceful and a liberating life. And in that sense, Shemitah affects the other 6 years, because Shemitah is an exercise in bitachon that we then implement and hopefully carry through even as we're naturally going through the processes of making a living in a natural way, in a normal way. Shemitah affects that as well. But this brings us to point two. How do the other 6 years affect Shemitah? So remember that Rashi I highlighted before, Ma Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, right? Rashi says, why is it that we talk about Har Sinai right at the beginning of the parsha that's going to talk about Shemitah? So Rashi raises that question, Ma Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. The story I would tell every year, it's not a joke, it's a story. The story I would tell every year was that I remember when I was a teenager, I once heard Rabbi Kenny Hain, who's the outgoing rabbi, retiring rabbi of Beth Shalom, but he was rabbi of congregation Beth Shalom in Lawrence for many years. He said that he was in Israel, and he was in a hotel, and he turned on the television because he wanted to practice his Hebrew, so he wanted to read the subtitles. It's the only reason. So he was watching the show MacGyver. Remember MacGyver? It's a great show, right? So he was watching MacGyver, and I guess as MacGyver was in that very delicate situation where he was going to have to figure out how to build a bomb out of a toothpick and get out of whatever situation that he was in, someone said, I found a toothpick. And someone said, what does that have to do with anything? And the subtitle on the bottom was, Ma'inyan Shemitah Itzel Har Sinai. And he said, Eretz Yisrael, this is amazing, man. Eretz Yisrael, that's the subtitle, that it's a Rashi and Chumash, Ma'inyan Shemitah Itzel Har Sinai. So the answer that Rashi gives to that famous question, Ma'inyan Shemitah Itzel Har Sinai, is a very troubling answer. The answer Rashi gives is, well, you know, Ma Shemitah Nemru Kloloser Protoser V'Tuktukeh Misinai, Avkula Nemru Kloloser V'Tuktukeh Misinai. Just like Shemitah, with all of its details, was given at Har Sinai, so all the mitzvot are given at Har Sinai with all of its details, which is a strange answer, because you could have given any mitzvah as the example that to associate with Har Sinai. Why is it, still begs the question, why is Shemitah mentioned in the context of Har Sinai? So in his Sefer Chamudei Daniel, one of our colleagues in yeshiva, Rav Daniel Stein, wrote a beautiful, beautiful Sefer on Chumash with like a whole mahalich on each parsha. So in his Sefer Chamudei Daniel, he points out a fundamental principle of a Torah Jew. And I think, you know, sometimes we're always interested in hearing big chidushim and something new and something exciting. Like, it's very, very important from time to time to review like the real fundamentals of Yiddishkeit, the fundamentals of Judaism. Rav Shachter often comments that he finds it strange that sometimes in order to get attendance at a shir, you have to talk about like, some crazy topic that's never, you know, can you transplant a pig's this into that? You know, like how many transplant surgeons are in the room, right? There aren't but like you want to learn a little kitzur shulchan aruch about hilchos netilas yadayim and no one's interested. You know, sometimes you have to go through the fundamentals. Sometimes you have to go through the basics. And in hashkafa, there are fundamentals also. And one of the fundamentals of hashkafa is that while it's clear that we have to perform many mundane tasks during our day, that's part of living in this world, it is equally clear that all of those tasks are meant to be understood as a necessity in being able to serve Hashem properly. Meaning our tasks that we do during the day, when we go to work, when we eat our meals, all of it should be understood in the context of Avodas Hashem. It should be filled with meaning, because I'm going to work to make money, but not just to make money, but I need that money to raise and support a Jewish family of Ovdei Hashem. I use every moment possible that I interact with other people to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. And it takes that which could seem like a drag, that which can seem like that which is pulling us away from Ruchnius, and infuse it with a sense of Ruchnius. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not stay behind in shul when we leave Shacharis in the morning. The Torah doesn't stay in the Beis Medrash. Wherever we go, the Torah is what guides us, and whatever we do is with the purpose of serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the attitude we train ourselves to have with every bracha we recite on food. I'm not just eating because I'm hungry. I'm grateful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing me with the opportunity to serve Him. And I remember years ago, I was an assistant rabbi in a shul in Lawrence called Shari Tefillah. And one legal holiday morning, they brought in as a guest speaker the Rosh Yeshiva from the Mir in Brooklyn, Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. This was many years ago. Rav Shmuel was known as like the Masmid Hador. He was a very, very big Masmid, very diligent learner. And the rabbi of the shul was not there, so I, as the rabbinic intern, had to introduce Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. A few times, Shari was like an important shul, so a few times the rabbi was away, and like I was, as a 24-year-old, I had the job. I remember the first time I introduced Rav Asher Weiss. It was like the first time he had come to America. It was like when Henry first introduced Rav Asher Weiss to America. So I introduced Rav Asher Weiss and I knew nothing about him. It was before any of his svarim came out. So they said, we need you to introduce this rabbi. He's visiting. I said, okay, tell me something about him. They said, oh, he's a big Talmud Chacham, but he speaks even to modern Orthodox crowds, even though he's a chassid. That's all they told me about him. So I said, there's this rabbi here, Asher Weiss, and he speaks to modern Orthodox people too. And they're like, oh, bravo. And Rav Asher Weiss got, thank God, I think he's forgotten about that introduction, and if he hasn't, he pretends that he has. So that was my first introduction. So I had to introduce Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, but I don't remember what I said about Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, but I remember what he spoke about, and he highlighted that people will have to ultimately give din v'cheshbon for every moment of time. And the answer we will have for the large majority of our time is that we were busy doing things that we need to do. You have to eat, you have to work, you have to have family time. We were busy doing things that we need to do. But Hashem is going to take out those times that we were free. You know, the legal holidays, that it happened to have been a legal holiday this year. So Hashem is going to take a look and say, okay, and what about when you weren't busy doing the things that you have to do? How did you behave during those times? How did you use your time during those times? The times when none of life's pressures were knocking loudly at the door, did you utilize those times for Amalat Torah? And if we did, then our defense holds up, that we indeed wished we could learn more and wished we could do more Avodas HaKodesh. We just didn't have the opportunity. But if we squandered those opportunities, then we not only have to pay for those hours of Bittul Torah and Bittul Zman, but for all the hours where we otherwise would have had a good excuse, for all the hours where we're busy doing other things, but it wasn't suffused with Ruchnius. In order to maintain that kind of mindset of wanting to fill every moment with a sense of spirituality, with a sense of accomplishment and a passion for Torah, a person has to be willing to push themselves to put in a certain sense of amelus and mesiras nefesh in their Torah. You know, I've often commented that I think part of the success of the YU Torah website is really a reflection of somewhat of a failure within our communities. And that is that, what I mean by that, it's great. YU Torah is great. I love it. But what I mean is as follows, that our shiurim are great to listen to.
not only because you have fantastic speakers like Rabbi Rothblatt, but our shiurim are great to listen to because no one ever interrupts. You know, like and everyone sits back and listens and enjoys. You ever like listen to shiurim from like, you know, a more, for lack of a better, a yeshivish community? They're like yelling at the guy half the time. It's like it seems almost rude, but really, in a certain sense, Torah learning for the most part is supposed to be an active endeavor. It's supposed to be something that we're working at, that we're putting in effort to do, and not just the effort to actually go there, but to experience Torah in a more lively way. You know, there's a famous story that in the town of Berdichev there was a proud self-proclaimed atheist who shared with anyone who would listen the list of his problems with a cruel and uncaring God. And Rav Levi Yitzchak approached him, and after the atheist went through why he doesn't believe in God, Rav Levi Yitzchak turned to him and he said, "You know, the God you don't believe in, I don't believe in him either. You know, the God that you've got a problem with, I don't believe in that God either. I have a very different conception of God." So when a high school student, I taught in high school for many years, when a high school student, even an adult, tells me they don't enjoy learning Gemara, for example, so I feel like saying, the Gemara that you don't enjoy learning, I also don't enjoy learning. Meaning, if the learning experience is bland, if the learning experience is not an active experience, it's not an experience where you activate your mind and you try to figure things out and you work on things, then you're never going to get the pleasure of that experience. There's a big difference between not enjoying an ancient Aramaic text that's being taught to you and not enjoying active participation in the conversation of generations among our people. You know, the flip side of toiling in the field during Shemitah, during the rest of the 6 years, is toiling in the Beis Medrash during Shemitah. That's what it's really all about. That's what Shemitah is supposed to be about. By teaching the laws of Shemitah in the context of Har Sinai, Rabbi Stein explains, we're demonstrating what Shemitah is really all about. It's not just for the year off. It's about taking that year to fill the Batei Medrash. We have an excuse for 6 years, but that excuse only holds up if during the Shemitah we dedicate ourselves to the Torah that was given at Har Sinai. And that's why it's used as the paradigm to be associated with Har Sinai. Because Shemitah is meant to demonstrate that it's all about taking that year to be able to connect spiritually, as Rabbi Rothrock was referring to before. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains in the Sefer Emes Liyakov, a wonderful Sefer on Chumash, Rabbi Yaakov explains that when Rashi says that we didn't observe a single Shemitah from the time we entered Eretz Yisrael until Chorban Bayis Rishon, and that's why we had to suffer 70 years of Golus Bavel, because he does the Cheshbon, that there were 70 Shemitahs that we missed. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says it's kind of hard to believe, because that assumes we missed every single Shemitah. In times of David, in times of Shlomo, we missed every single Shemitah, and we had to make up 70 years of Shemitahs? That's impossible to believe. So says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, no, we didn't work the land during those Shemitahs, but we also didn't fill the Batei Medrash the way they should have been. We didn't take that time off to connect to the Ribono Shel Olam as it was meant to be. And that is also called missing a Shemitah. So how is it that the other 6 years affect the Shemitah? The other 6 years teach us a work ethic. The other 6 years teach us how hard you have to work if you want to see success, and how challenging it has to be, and how you have to deal with setbacks sometimes, and sometimes the field is going to flood, and sometimes the weather's not going to cooperate, and sometimes the crop is just not going to come out the way it was supposed to be. And you know what you have to do? You have to go out into the field the next day and work again anyhow, because that's your only choice. And when we have that Shemitah year where we're working on our Ruchnias, it's meant to be work. So just like the Shemitah educates the other 6 years, that the Shemitah affects the other 6 years, the other 6 years affect the Shemitah as well. And then there's one final piece, and that is the impact of the entire system. You know, there's Gemara Masechta Shabbos on Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, where the Gemara tells us that we are supposed to emulate the Ribono Shel Olam. Abba Shaul Omer Ve'anvehu, we say in Az Yashar every day, Zekeli Ve'anvehu. So how do you translate that word, Ve'anvehu? It's a very difficult word to translate. I think Art Scroll itself has three different translations in three different Art Scrolls. How to translate Va'anvehu? So the Gemara says, what does Va'anvehu mean? I think someone said that Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky was Davins from an Art Scroll English Hebrew Siddur. And someone came over to him and said, Rosh Hashiva, you know, what are you doing? It's like embarrassing. You're using an English translation of the Siddur? And he picked, I don't remember which phrase it was, I wish I remembered. He picked a phrase from Tachlin and he said, can you tell me what this phrase means? And the fellow said, I have no idea. He's like, right, okay. So that's why it's okay to use the siddur. Vanveyu says the Gemara means, havidomalo, that you're supposed to be similar to Hashem. You should mimic Hashem's behavior. Mahu chanun v'rachum afata heyechan v'rachum. The problem with that is that there's a Gemara in Sota Daf Yudalid that tells us that we're supposed to emulate God also, but it's a totally different pasuk. Pasuk says, "Achrei Hashem elokeichem teleichu." V'chiyev shalol la'adam la'alechach hashchina. Is it possible for a person to follow the Shechina? It's an eshuchla. It's an all-consuming fire. No. So what does it mean? Elahalechachar midosav. You should follow the midos of Hashem. Mahu malbisharumim afatatil basharumim. Mahu mevakercholim afatavakercholim. Just like Hashem gives clothing to those who need, so should you. And just like Hashem visits the sick, so should you visit the sick. Now you don't need to be the biggest brisker in the world to realize that if there are two Gemaras that darshan two different psukim and give two different sets of examples of how to imitate Hashem, maybe there are two dinim over here, right? Maybe this isn't all one idea. Maybe there are two different concepts. But what are these two concepts? And I think there's an important yesod here. You know, we often categorize mitzvos in different ways. We categorize mitzvos as, you know, usually in pairs of two. There are mitzvos asay and mitzvos los asay. There are mitzvos of dibur and mitzvos of maisa. There are mitzvos d'oraisa and there are mitzvos d'rabanan. There are mitzvos b'ron l'chavero and there are mitzvos b'ron l'makom. The Vilna Gaon, though, tells us that that last pairing is incomplete. There are not two categories of mitzvos, b'ron l'chavero and b'ron l'makom. There are three categories of mitzvos. There are mitzvos b'ron l'chavero, treating others nicely. There are mitzvos b'ron l'makom, serving Hashem properly. And there are mitzvos ben adam la'atzmo. Ben adam la'atzmo means to make yourself the best version of you that you can be. Even if the lesser version is not affecting anybody else. You're all alone in a room and you just throw yourself into a rage and you get angry and you start throwing things. Nobody sees it, nobody hears it, it doesn't affect anybody. You're not doing any averos to the Ribono Shel Olam. But is that the best you that you can be? Right? If your team loses the game and you throw the remote at the TV, is that the best you that you can be? That's a mitzvah ben adam la'atzma. Ben adam la'atzma means to self-improvement. The Mishnah tells us, al shlosh devarim ha'olam ha'omed, al Torah v'al avodah v'al gumilus chasadim. We normally assume that avodah is a reference to karbanos or to tefillah. Rav Zevin suggests that avodah, no, it means work. A person who learns Torah, ala Torah, that's ben adam la'makom. Between him and Hashem. Someone, Gemilas Chasadim, that's capitalizing on opportunities beyond the Chavero. Avoda, a work ethic, earning an honest living, developing a proper work ethic, that's a mitzvah beyond the Ma'atzmo. That's being as good as you can be. And the mitzvah of Shemitah reflects all three categories, and maybe this is an additional interpretation as to why Shemitah is used as the paradigm of that which is associated with Har Sinai. Because Shemitah represents all three of those categories. V'shavsa ha'aret Shabbos la'Hashem v'nadam l'makom. Sheishanim tizra sadcha v'sheishanim tizra karmacha v'asavta estuvuasa. It's avoda, it's a work ethic. That's v'nadam la'atzma. Take care of the poor. Make all of your payrolls hefker. Let anybody into your field. That's a ben adam lechavero. Because the mitzvah of Shemitah encapsulates all three of those categories. It's chosen as the prototype to teach that all mitzvahs were in fact given at Har Sinai. You know, Shemitah affords the farmer the opportunity to relate to what the Evyon is going through. You know, he's got a field the other 6 years that he's able to nurture and he's able to receive food from and receive parnasa from. There are some people that don't have that ever, that every year is a Shemitah year for them. And the farmer experiences that 1 year, and then from then on, he'll never see the Evyon in the same way again. There's a story told of one of the Chashuva Talmidei Chacham, Rav Elya Chaim Milodz, I think a Hasidish Rebbe maybe, I'm not sure. That he was going collecting once, and he knocked, and it was a frigid cold night. And he knocked on the door of an ashir. And the person opened the door, he said, oh, Rav Elya Chaim, come in. And he stood where he was, he said, oh, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? And the guy said, oh, I'm great, you know, Baruch Hashem, come in. And he just kept the conversation going. Instead of walking through the door, he said, how are your children? How's everything going? And he just kept the conversation going. And the balabas standing at the door, the open door, not wanting to be rude, because the Talmud Chacham standing right outside his door, is freezing. And he's shaking already. He's freezing so much. And Rabbi Chaim waits until he sees him that he's freezing so much, and he says, "I'm collecting money for firewood for aniyim who can't afford to heat their homes." And just feel it a little bit. To feel what the other person is going through a little bit, you're never going to look at them the same way again. You know, there's a reason why people who've gone through hardships will often contribute greater sums of money to organizations that help people going through those kinds of hardships. Because they know what it is. They've been there. And when you know what it is, when you feel that pain, that's what Shemitah is. You feel the pain of what it means to be an Evyon. The Yovel represents a fresh start. A person has worked himself into a situation of avdus or financial difficulty, is given the opportunity to start with a clean slate. And in order to do so, the person has to begin with the understanding that the religious personality is composed of three parts, Ben Adam L'Chaver, Ben Adam L'Atzmo, and Ben Adam L'Makom. And the Yovel has all three elements also. You send out the slaves. That's clearly Ben Adam L'Chaver, a person who you're accustomed to have this imbalanced power relationship with, has to be treated as a peer. Now he's just like you. You have to provide him with a new beginning. The blowing of the shofar represents Uru Yishena Mishinaschem, waking up from your slumber, Ben Adam L'Atzmo. Think about where you are and where you can be. Refine your personality to the point that your very essence changes. And returning lands during the Yovel to their original families, that represents the mitzvah Ben Adam L'Makom, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu willed for the land to be divided amongst the Jewish people along tribal boundaries, and the full covenant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only recognized when each Shevet recognizes their portion in the land. When a person is willing to part with the land over which he has toiled for 49 years, because that's what the will of God is, that person recognizes that ultimately everything is from Hashem. And it's a Ben Adam L'Makom. So let's go back to those two Gemaras we said before. One Gemara, Darshan Zapasuk, that tells me, Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Telechu, the Gemara in Sota, and it says, just like Hashem clothes those who need clothing and visits the sick, you should do those things as well. What kinds of mitzvahs are those? Those are Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, how you do for others. The Gemara in Shabbos, Ve'anvehu, doesn't say to do Bikur Cholim, Nicham Avelim, Malbisharum. No, you know what it says? Mahu Chanun Ve'rachum. That's not Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. That's Ben Adam L'Atzmo. That's who you are. Are you a compassionate person? Are you a kind person? It's all reflected in that Gemara, those two categories that are so often confused for each other. Based on that, Rav Asher Weiss explains the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Hei, the Gemara talks about which section of Torah is referred to as a Sefer HaYashar. Rabbi Yochanan maintains the reference is to Sefer Bereishis, and Rabbi Lazar says, no, it's Sefer Devarim. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan puts the emphasis on defining who we are, the character of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the midos of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who we are. Whereas Rabbi Lazar is putting the emphasis on Vasisa HaYashar Vatov, on what you do, on how we take care of people, on Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. So you have this third element of Shemitah, that the entire Shemitah and Yovel system teaches us about the totality of Avodas Hashem. So there's so many lessons of Shemitah. So if we had to title tonight's shir, Power of Shemitah, was just a placeholder. I had no idea what I was going to talk about, so I said, okay, Power of Shemitah. But if we had to really title tonight's shir, right, it wouldn't be seven lessons of Shemitah. Seven is too many, and they're all bitachon anyway, right? It's three lessons of Shemitah. Number one, we learn that Shemitah prepares us to view our success in the 6 years of work as coming from Hashem. Bitachon. Number two, the 6 years teach us the work ethic necessary to succeed in the Beis HaMedrash, to succeed in Ruchnius, Amelus. So again, number one is how Shemitah prepares us for the other 6 years. The bitachon that's built, the bitachon muscle that one builds during Shemitah should be used throughout the other 6 years. And second, that the 6 years teach us about Shemitah, the work ethic that we know we have to put in, and the dealing with setbacks, and constantly going back and trying harder, that teaches us how to deal with a year of Ruchnius as well, of Amelus B'Torah. And third, that Shemitah and Yovel in totality represent the total sense of Avodas Hashem in all three arenas, Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Atzmo. We should be zocha to be able to observe Shemitah in its simple sense, midah oraisa, when Yovel is knowing, when Rov Yoshveh Aleha, when all Jews come back to Eretz Yisrael, and indeed we'll be able to observe, we cross the Dror Ba'aretz, we'll be able to declare liberty to all of Klal Yisrael, the Ezer Hashem, the Karov.